Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome in to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy to be back with you. And today we got a lot of local sports to talk about. It's such a downtime for the national scene. Although we do have one baseball game tonight. Other than that, I mean, there's just not a lot brewing. We're going to focus heavily on the local scene. We're just a couple of weeks away from athletes reporting for the upcoming junior college athletic season. Greg Dart, who is the associate vice president at USU Eastern, he's going to join us in studio, and we'll talk about some of the changes. We have a new softball coach stepping in at USU Eastern. They've added esports now for the upcoming year as well. And I've got to be completely honest with you. I don't know anything about esports. Video games, that's basically what it is. USU Eastern will join the craze, and it's a nationwide craze, and this thing is legit. USU Eastern recently announcing that they would add that as a varsity sport. So we'll talk gaming on the show today as well. Plus, we'll take a look at some of the other things happening at USU Eastern. Also today, I want to talk motocross. Now, working here at Castle Country Radio, I've had a unique look at the world of motocross over the last, 8 or 9 years. And Jack Anderson, who is the son of Ann and Paul Anderson, who own the radio station, competes at a very high amateur level in the sport of motocross. Now, he recently qualified for the big amateur championship in Tennessee in August at Loretta Lynn's. Very big deal. I was going over some of the names that have come out as champions before. They're names that you would definitely recognize, and we will talk about that. But it's a story of perseverance, and that's what I love so much about it. Last year, Jack was unsuccessful in his bid to qualify for Loretta Lynn's. But this year, he qualified and qualified very early, giving him the opportunity to prepare for that final stage. And in fact, right now, he is training in North Carolina, gearing up for the big amateur championship. He is going to join us over the phone every now and then. You know, we talk auto racing or we talk motocross. I look forward to it. It breaks up the monotony, but I love this story because all the employees here at the radio station, we've got to witness it firsthand, the amount of work that he puts in. On the side, he plays high school football at Carbon. And so I'm looking forward to having the conversation about how the training for something this big differs from the grind of a high school football season, as well as everything that goes into it. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a very fun interview. That's what we have coming up on the show today. Before we get into our local guests, let's take a look at what's happening in the national scene. In the NFL, I call it a year-round sport because it's never a dull moment. And today, much of the same. Melvin Gordon, running back for the Los Angeles Chargers, he says he will not be a participant at training camp. He will hold out and will demand a trade unless he receives a new contract. Now, are the Chargers willing to trade Melvin Gordon? I don't think so, but Gordon's agent Fletcher Smith told Adam Schefter of ESPN that Gordon's not going to report to training camp, and he will demand a trade if they do not give him a new deal. He was the 15th overall pick in 2015. It was the same year that Todd Gurley was selected. He's going to get $5.6 million this season. Okay, but he's established himself as one of the best, probably, you know, I'd put him in the top five, one of the best three-down backs in the league. And he's only 26 years old. He had 885 rushing yards last season, about 500 receiving yards, 14 touchdowns. He only played in 12 games. He played a full 16 games and finished well over 1,000 yards in 2017. I mean, this guy is legit. There's no question about it. Pro Football Focus noted that Gordon was its highest graded running back against boxes of 8 or more defenders and the third highest overall player last year, which is impressive. And that's a statistic that I really like. Pro Football Focus will really break it down. and talk to you in absolutes. I want to know what running backs are doing when they're facing 8 men in the box. Gordon was fantastic. I don't think that it's going to be difficult for the Chargers to find a replacement for Gordon if they decide they don't want to pay him. I mean, we saw this last year. Steelers didn't want to pay Le'Veon Bell. He sat out the entire year. James Conner nearly ran for 1,000 yards. And when I look at the Los Angeles Chargers depth chart, it's a team that I paid a lot of attention to last year. And I think that the Chargers are arguably one of the best teams in the AFC moving into the season. They have all the pieces intact. This is not what you want to hear right now. But if you take a look at the depth chart for the Chargers, Austin Eckler is not a bad running back at all. In fact, this kid was able to produce when Melvin Gordon was on the mend last season. Curious to see what the Chargers actually do here. Okay, because again, to me, it's a selfish move by Melvin Gordon. I know everybody wants to get paid. I get that. But with the offseason that this team has had, I mean, this is the last thing they need. This is a distraction. And you start looking around at some of the teams that could use a running back, and right off the top of my head, a team that focused on defense this past offseason, to me, it's the Green Bay Packers. I mean, if Melvin Gordon cannot come to an agreement with the Chargers, if I'm the Packers, I'm the first team on the phone. You got Matt LaFleur. Aaron Jones, I guess, would probably be the best thing that they have available right now out of the backfield. But LaFleur pairing a running back like Gordon with Aaron Rodgers, I mean, that right there could catapult the Packers, in my mind, based off what they did defensively, right to the front of the pack in the NFC. This is definitely a story to keep an eye on. But unless Gordon gets a new contract, he says he's not going to go to camp, he will hold out, and he will demand a trade. So we'll see how this one plays out. Speaking of trades, there's a report circulating that Russell Westbrook to the Miami Heat seems inevitable. This is what an anonymous league executive said, and it does make sense on multiple levels. And I don't know that this is Russell Westbrook saying, look, you have to trade me. I'm not playing for Oklahoma City. I think Russell Westbrook has been very loyal to the Thunder. But based on their cap situation, the Thunder had no problem moving on from Paul George. But to me, this is the complete opposite of what we're typically talking about. Okay, you have an organization that was not willing to pay the luxury tax. They wanted to move on from Paul George. I don't know the whole ins and outs. They didn't supply Paul George, obviously, with enough confidence to lead him to believe that they were going to build a contender. And so they move him out. Once again, Russell Westbrook's the last man standing. Now, I hate trade demands. I can't stand them. I hate it when players demand trades. I think the Oklahoma City mayor said it best. Regardless of contracts, everybody's a free agent anymore in the NBA. And I think that could probably trickle over to the NFL as well. Everybody's a free agent, right? I hate it. But this is different. How many times does the Oklahoma City front office, a front office that I have given a lot of credit to, have to continually put Russell Westbrook in a situation like this? They couldn't hang on to Kevin Durant. They lost him for nothing. You go out, you get Paul George. They gave up a lot to get Paul George as well. Don't forget, they gave up Victor Oladipo. It's not as if they just were handed Paul George. So they give up Oladipo. And Russell Westbrook, okay, I'll sign long term here. This is a franchise that looks willing to continue to supply me with an opportunity to win. He signed long term. Then they deal Paul George for draft picks. And I don't think that Russell Westbrook is necessarily demanding a trade, but I think the Thunder have realized that with their cap situation, and they have a couple of bad contracts. I mean, that Steven Adams deal is not good. The Dennis Schroeder deal is not good. They really can't make any improvements on this roster. They have to tear it down. That's the danger of giving out max contracts if you have other bad contracts already on the tap, like Steven Adams. This is a Thunder team that drafted Kevin Durant, drafted James Harden, and drafted Russell Westbrook, yet they're in this predicament. They have to trade Russell Westbrook. I believe it'll be a mutual part. I don't blame Westbrook if he doesn't want to play in OKC, and I don't blame the Thunder at this point in time for wanting to move on, stripping it all the way down. They've drafted very well in the past, but it seems inevitable that he is going to get moved, and it would be Russell Westbrook with Jimmy Butler. Those are two savages in the backcourt. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. Again, we're going to focus heavily on the local scene. Only one sporting event tonight. We do get a baseball game before we fully resume tomorrow following the All-Star break. Houston will take on the Rangers tonight. So it's Houston versus Texas tonight at 6 p.m. That game will be on ESPN. That's it. Local sports galore coming up. It's a Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports, and it's right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. On the local sports front today, we're going to talk USU Eastern Athletics. A lot's going on. In fact, as we hit the month of July, we are on the cusp of what's going to be a very busy August. Joining us right now to talk about some of the latest news with the USU Eastern Athletic Department, we have Associate Vice President Greg Dart. And Greg, I always look forward to the conversations. I appreciate you making time for us again today.
Thanks so much for having me, Jordan.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. When I talk about July, I mean, obviously August is a big month, not only for athletics, but the entire school at USU Eastern. So right now it's kind of calm before the storm, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, July is definitely that time where we are trying to prepare everything. We have athletes reporting as early as August 1st, and so getting all those things done, getting those last minute recruits signed, all of those pieces are taking place right now, and it is a little more calm, but you can feel it rumbling.
Well, let's talk about some of the fall sports. First off, soccer will have both men and women, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe the first scrimmage is August 17th, if I'm not mistaken. So it is right around the corner. We have talked to Coach Bennett and also now Coach Woodhouse as well. Coach Bennett's going to oversee the soccer program, but now we have a head coach for both the men and the women, and I'm sure this is nothing but a positive for the program.
Yeah, so when we started soccer now, gosh, it's been... what, 6 years, five years of league play, and the idea was that we could have one head coach to run both teams, and that served us very well. And trying to establish a program is always difficult, and having Coach Bennett and having his really his philosophy in both programs, I think, has helped us to establish what we needed to. But the goal was always to move to a head women's coach and a head men's coach. And so this year we've been able to make that move. And so Jared Woodhouse coming in as our men's coach, Ammon Bennett continuing as our women's coach, and then the director of soccer is a great move, I think, for the future of the program and to help us go to the next level.
I also like the fact in talking to both coaches that Coach Bennett's kind of had, you know, 4 or 5 years to groom Coach Woodhouse. Right, I mean, that's always a positive as well. He'll be a first-time head coach at this level. Obviously, very decorated as a player. He had experience coaching club teams. But the fact that he's been able to see this now up close and personal for 4 to 5 years, I mean, that's a true positive.
Right, and I think that's one thing as far as junior college athletics that sometimes we don't always get. You know, you get these people who make the jump from high school or from the club organizations in different sports and go directly into coaching college. And it's not that they're not a capable coach, but, you know, learning what it takes as far as things like letters of intent, things like travel, all of those pieces are outside of coaching, but a big part of your day-to-day operations. And so having that opportunity to learn at the feet of Ammon, to really see what it takes to run a successful program, I think will just make Coach Woodhouse, who is a tremendous coach, even more successful in his first year as a head coach on the collegiate level.
Outside of soccer, we have volleyball coming up, and volleyball is coming off, I believe it was the most successful season in the history of the program, right? And if we talk local coaches, well, we have Daniel Jensen, who's a local coach. It was a great story last year.
It absolutely was, and it's one of those things that when we made that offer to her, this is exactly what we envisioned. We knew her drive, her determination, her ability to recruit, and her ability to coach, and you just, I mean, week in, week out, you can't find better competition than in the Scenic West Athletic Conference when it comes to volleyball. The national champion often comes from this conference. I mean, it's just, you have 3-4 ranked teams out of the five all, or out of the six all year long. I mean, it just, that's the way that it is. And she came out and she was just competitive in a way that was really exciting. She had an amazing team. I think she's got a great team coming back this year, and some new assets, and they're just the kind of students that we want on campus as well. And so she runs a very clean program, but a very, very competitive program. And it's so great to have those local ties. What it's done, and this is partially because of how successful they've been, and partially because of the way that the program is built and who's running it. But our attendance at volleyball has increased almost 300% over the last 4 years. And people, I mean, it's exciting to go watch a volleyball match.
It really is. And as you mentioned, I mean, on the local level, Greg, I've really seen an increase of interest even from the younger groups. And this is something that I think gets overlooked so often. I mean, if you have success at the JUCO level in a town like this, before you know it, the kids at the high school and the junior or the middle school level, they get excited about it. And I've seen an increase of excitement and enthusiasm at the younger ages.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the benefits that we have. People ask all the time on the benefits of junior college athletics. And for us, you know, it's easy to say what those are for our campus. But what those benefits to the community are some of those things that we don't always talk about. The ability for there to be these athletic and then these real life role models for the younger kids to come and see, an opportunity to, you know, to come and see somebody performing at a very high level in the sport that you love. I've got a daughter who enjoys volleyball, and she goes to those games, and I mean, she's starstruck to watch them because she thinks, oh my gosh, look at the way that they're performing. And so, yeah, I think that's a big part of what success means. You know, you can look at wins and losses, and that's a big part of it. But what does success mean? It means all those other things as well.
Again, we're being joined right now by Greg Dart, Associate Vice President at USU Eastern, as we talk about the athletics. All right, let's talk about some changes. First off, we'll begin with the softball, because we have a new softball coach. This would mark the third, I believe the program's been around, this would be fourth year, correct?
Correct.
But a little bit of a younger head coach than what we've had as well. And I think maybe that's exciting as well. It's kind of the element of the unknown when you have a former player and a young program that is now the head coach.
Yeah, so Shelly Sherliff is here, played for us. It was a... really has been an important part of our program, both as an assistant coach and as a player, but is really, yeah, on the younger side of things, as you say. Having said that, she filled in the last few weeks of the season, did some great things, has been out recruiting. She understands what the junior college league looks like. She understands what it means to be a coach, and she stepped in and we're really excited for what that will mean. One of the challenges with softball in the first few years that we've had has been stability. Mm-hmm. That we've had coaching changes for various reasons. We've had because of coaching changes, that means you always have transfers and things like that. And so, you know, being able to find that stability, I think, is going to be important. And we felt like that she was somebody who could bring that to us. And she's, you know, wise beyond her years.
Outside of a new softball coach, it was recently announced the addition of eSports, so Varsity eSports, and you and I had a conversation about this a little bit off the cuff before we hopped on the air, and I got to be honest with you, my knowledge on eSports is very, very minimal, but what does this mean for the university?
Yeah, eSports is one of those things that I'm the same way. I don't know that I understand. I can sit down and talk football or basketball or baseball yeah. with you for hours, and always looking for somebody to talk hockey with. But eSports, I don't know that I can always get there. What I do know is it is growing faster than just about anything in the country right now. Collegiate eSports is something that. That I think if you talk to the prospective college students, they all understand. They watch. I mean, it's amazing. The second most watched live sporting event last year in this country behind the Super Bowl was an esports championship watched live by over 40 million people.
Wow.
And you start thinking about what that means and you know, we're used to watching these games being played live in front of us. people are watching these games being played on a screen and getting the same thrill that you and I have in watching LeBron, you know, go for a triple double or something like that. People are watching an Overwatch championship and getting those same kind of thrills. So it's a new world. It's one that still right now, on the national level is being determined how it fits. The two major overseeing bodies have joined together and, but we are excited. We will be competing this year. The first varsity esports program in the state was the University of Utah, a Pac-12 team, one of the first Division I teams to do it. But it's now expanding. Snow College is starting this year as well. I think you'll see esports as a big new frontier in what gaming looks like at the collegiate level and even in the high schools.
I think it'll take a little bit for the older audience to embrace that, but the younger audience, I'm sure they're all for it.
Absolutely. When we've sent out interest, you know, questionnaires and held meetings, it's amazing the people who've shown up. And I'm sad to admit that I'm in that older audience that I'm still trying to figure out exactly what it means. We're actually headed out next week to the national meetings on how this is being set up, the National Association of Collegiate Esports. And so I think we'll get a little bit better idea on what that's going to look like this fall. But you'll see we've, you know, had some purchases going forward, and you'll see things that are being started as far as facilities on our campus, and it's an exciting time.
Greg, before I let you go, we have to talk about academics, especially with the athletic department, because so often we forget that these are student athletes. Student always comes first. And I know that USU Eastern recently received a lot of recognition. The student athletes were phenomenal. And as far as the All Academic Honor Awards go, USU Eastern, it was well over 30 athletes, if I'm not mistaken, received all academic honors. That's something that doesn't happen every day, and it's something that should definitely get a little bit more publicity.
Absolutely, and it is just a focus of ours as we've looked at what it means to have a successful athletic department. Just like we said, what does success mean for a team? For an athletic department, that doesn't mean just, okay, what are the accolades on the field or on the court or on the diamond? What it means is that we have these great student athletes. It means that they're serving in their community. It means that if you're riding rodeo for us, you're representing the institution. But so much of it means that you're having success in the classroom. And it's just, you know, over year after year, we see that success in the classroom is a focus, and it continues to increase with a department GPA of 3.28. You know, you see that the average student athlete is having more success than our average student. When people think of student athletes, they should think of students who are successful in their classes, who graduate earlier on time, who are completing and who are good citizens, because that's who our student athletes are. And that to me is a huge part of what it means to have a successful athletic program. And that is from the top down, from our athletic director to our academic advisor. That is our focus.
Again, that's Greg Dart, Associate Vice President at USU Eastern. Greg, it's always a pleasure to get you in and have a conversation about the athletics at USU Eastern. Thank you so much for the time, and I know we'll talk again relatively soon.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we're going to venture outside of our normal sports realm, you know, away from the basketball, football, baseball topic. We're going to talk motocross. We're going to be joined by a local rider when we return, and we'll talk about the Amateur National Championships, which are coming up at the end of this month, moving into August. That's coming up next on this Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Auto Farm Studios.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio.
You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM. We're going to break from the traditional sports. A very cool story, very cool situation that's taking place here in the Castle Country. We actually have a local writer on the phone with us right now, Jack Anderson. And Jack right now is actually out of the area training for the Loretta Lynn's Amateur Championship motocross race, which is right around the corner. Jack, first off, it is a pleasure to get you on the show today. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, as I said, it's extremely unique, and I've had a different perspective on this story for the last couple of years. I know you've put a lot of hard work and determination into qualifying for this national championship race that'll take place at the end of this month. Really, over the last 2 years, it's been a grueling process, and now you're in the process of training for it. So first things first, talk to me about what has actually gone into you qualifying for this national championship race.
Lots goes into it. You have to have the mindset of being determined to travel lots of miles to go to the races and have the determination to train for all the humidity and heat. You have to have full commitment and never back out and have no doubts in yourself.
Yeah, for those who are unaware, Loretta Lynn's Amateur Championship is the largest right in the world as far as amateur motocross racing goes.
Yes, it's the biggest race in the country for amateur racers.
At what point in time in your life did you say, okay, this is something that I want to do and I want to get to that ultimate point of competing in this particular race?
It's always been a life goal of mine to go to this race, but just 2 years ago I finally made the decision to commit to it and I stuck with it and now we're there.
I think if we go back to last year, and again, I was able to see this, you were unsuccessful in getting to Loretta's last season, and I'm sure that right there in itself not only made you better out on the bike, but it really taught you a lot. So go back, talk about the struggles that you endured last year in not qualifying and how much you improved from last year to this year.
Yeah, last year, we were fully committed, had everything we needed, just In motorcycle racing, you have to have large amounts of luck, and I didn't have that luck, and the cards didn't fall into play, and I mean, it made me a better rider. It showed me things that I'm needed to learn for this year, and it just prepared me even better for this year.
Mentally, how much did you improve?
It helped me mentally so much because I barely missed it last year, and it gave me the mindset that I was going to get it the next year.
Now, as far as qualifying goes, tell me about that process and what you actually have to do to get an invitation to this particular event.
So for you to qualify, you do area qualifiers, which are more kind of local, closer to where you live. And then after you do area qualifiers, you do regional qualifiers, which you have to travel further distance for. And the regional qualifiers, you have to finish in the top four. And if you finish in the top four, you get your ticket to go to Loretta Lynn's, the Amateur National, and at Loretta's, it's 42 kids on a gate, and it's all out.
And as far as it being the largest, there's close to 40 classes, right?
Yes, there's 40, maybe more. It's a big race.
So now that, well, before we jump into what you're doing right now, I want to go back to this year when you finally qualified, because the greatest thing about sports, there's so many redemption stories, there's so many determination stories. When you finally qualified after all the hard work that you put in, you know, last year not getting there and this year getting there fairly early, what was that feeling like?
It was a relief because last year we traveled very far distances to try and make it and to not make it. It was a heartbreaker, but it just prepared us even better. But getting it done early this year helped us relax a little bit more, get regrouped, and get prepared for the big race.
You're very even keel as far as your demeanor goes, so I'm sure that the excitement probably didn't show, did it?
Yeah, I mean, I was really excited. Just it's a life goal. It's been a lifelong dream, so I'm very excited to be going.
I was doing some research on Loretta Lynn's myself, and I know that some of the previous champions, Jeremy McGrath, Travis Pastrana, Kevin Windham, these are just some of the names that that maybe someone that's not too familiar with the sport, they would recognize names like that. So it's kind of like the last step, isn't it, before you go to a professional level?
Yeah, Loretta Lynn's is that's the race you want to go to get recognized by pro teams if you want, if you're going to make a life out of racing motorcycles to get a pro deal.
Again, we're being joined right now by Jack Anderson. He's a local motocross racer. He will be competing at the Loretta Lynn's Amateur Championship, which will go down at the end of this month, early August. So, Jack, tell me about the training regime right now. I know you're out of the area. Right now you're in North Carolina, correct?
Yes, I'm in Morganton, North Carolina at a training compound.
And what has gone into that? What does that all kind of entail?
It's a very hard training we do. We ride 4 days a week. We ride in the mornings, and then we do gym after riding. It's very hot and humid. It's very good training because it's going to be hot and humid in Tennessee, which is where the national race is. And it's good to be able to come out here and get the training in before the race.
Now, how many individuals are you training with?
Right now, I am training with 5 other individuals, but there will be more coming out soon.
And so how much better of a rider have they made you?
It has made me a lot more of a better rider because it pushes you, it gets you out of your comfort zone, and helps you improve your riding.
Now, I know for you, you guys are so family-oriented when it comes to riding. You know, you guys travel as a family. I know even on the local circuit, it's so much different than any other sport because while you're competing against one another at the same time, you kind of develop relationships. So you being away from what you have known during your career, how much different is that for you? Because now you're kind of isolated, right, in your own little area without the help of your family, without the help of your friends that you ride with on a consistent basis.
Yeah, it's definitely different because I'm out here on my own. I'm with some friends that I know, but they're not great friends. But it's different not being with my family and not being at training with them. But it's good to have this training.
But what's the one aspect of the training that you've picked up that will prepare you for what's ahead at Loretta's?
It's definitely just got to be the coaching. My coach right now, his name's Gavin Graysick. He's a former pro, and he's helped me a whole lot with just riding techniques and training in the gym, nutrition, what I need to be eating, and what I just need to be healthy and ready for the race.
Yeah, it sounds like any other sport. There's a lot more that goes into the training than people realize, especially if you're riding motocross. I know you've talked about the humidity and just training and getting familiar with the way the weather is going to kind of situate, but at the same time, it's the hidden things, I would assume, like nutrition, that you really probably pick up on.
Yeah, it's definitely... Getting used to the humidity and everything is a big part, but you also have to have the off-the-bike stuff, like your training, if you're going on bike rides, your nutrition. You need to make sure you're eating healthy. You can't be eating anything that's going to be bad for you. You just need to be on top of everything.
Now, I know you play high school football for Carbon as well, so let me ask you this. What's the biggest difference in training for something like Loretta Lynn's compared to training for something as grueling as a 10-game football season?
Motorcycle racing, it's more about lasting. It's cardio. You gotta be able to last. And football, it's all about being the biggest and baddest dude.
Well, I know that this training has been good for your rep. I was told today that your Instagram account has grown by about 100.
Yes, it's very good. I'm out here with some very big names, and it's helped grow my name a lot more. And I'm hoping it's going to grow my name a whole lot more.
Well, let's talk once again before I let you go about Loretta Lynn's and what is coming up, all the logistics of it, Jack. When will you actually be participating at this amateur national championship?
I will be participating July 28th to August 3rd.
Okay, and again, what class?
I'll be racing the 125C class.
You feel like you're mentally prepared for it?
Yes, I feel like I'm very ready for this, and I'm ready to go out and give it my all.
Well, you've definitely put in a lot of work, I know, over the last couple of years to get to this point, and now it's kind of paid off, hasn't it?
Yes, it's paid off a lot. It's good to finally get this accomplishment and have this goal finished.
Jack, we can end with this. Where can people go to watch videos of the training? I know it's all pretty accessible for people that maybe want to get a little bit more insight, maybe see a little bit more about what we're talking about. Where can they go to find videos of the training?
You can go to my Instagram. It's at jack.anderson Anderson.84, or you can go to the Deegan38 YouTube channel. It's a rider that I'm here training with, that he has a filmer that is filming him, and he posts videos of all of the riders out here training, and that's what one thing you can use, and go to my Instagram and all that.
Jack, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Best of luck the rest of the way in your training. And of course, when you get to Loretta's, I'm sure I'll be talking to you again relatively soon. But best of luck and congratulations on all your accomplishments up to this point.
Thank you.
We've got a break one last time. We'll return and put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Auto Forum Studios on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hi, this is Jason Kidd. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Bescarini, KOAL, 750 AM.
The news in the NBA just continues to trickle in. Talked about Russell Westbrook and the odds that he probably ends up in Miami. But now reports are indicating that those trade talks have had a snag because Miami is reluctant to include a couple of players. That's all per report. I'll bring in Travis Anderson to help close out this Thursday edition of the show. Travis, when you take a look at the potential trade of Russell Westbrook, if you're the Miami Heat, and I don't know which players they're not willing to add into the trade. I don't know who that is. I don't know.
I'm going to say Tyler Herro, Bam Adebayo.
That's stupid.
Those two, I don't know what else the Heat... I mean, of course the Thunder are going to ask for those guys, and if you're the Heat, give them up. It's Russell Westbrook. You're going to pair him with Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, I think if you pair Westbrook with Butler and that meshes, obviously it's a great move for Oklahoma City. If I was OKC, I'd be really looking for draft picks, even if you can include a different, you know, another couple of contracts that the Heat want to get rid of. If you can add a couple of more draft picks to the haul that you already got for Paul George, I think that puts you in a very good position. And I'm not a guy that values draft picks. I never have been. But taking a look at, you know, Tyler Herro and Bam, that's $6 million. That's what you have in salary for this season. So you keep Justice Winslow, and you can acquire the rights to Russell Westbrook, and I'd have to actually sit down and twerk the numbers to see exactly how this whole thing would play out. But right now, the way the NBA is moving, the landscape of the NBA, you have to have two stars. You have to. And right now, the Heat have one. They got rid of Hassan Whiteside. I didn't hate that deal. You cleared some cap space. Goran Dragic is nice. He's not great. He's in a contract year. That's a valuable trade chip. You trade whatever you have to in order to get Russell Westbrook. Now, I'm not going to question Pat Riley, because if he wants to get a deal done, Pat Riley will get a deal done. There's a couple of general managers or a couple of individuals in charge of basketball operations that I have full confidence in getting the job done. Pat Riley would be one of those guys.
How about Goran Dragic, Justice Winslow, Kelly Olynyk, 2015 first round top 10 protected, and a 2026 unprotected. Something like that.
You know what this does, though? Because, again, I'm going to go back to what I just said. As far as general managers or those involved in basketball operations that can get deals done, this is why you have to be careful if you're the Heat. If that's all it's going to take, the Houston Rockets are lurking, and they have the most aggressive general manager in the NBA in Daryl Morey.
He's not afraid to make moves.
He is not afraid to make moves, and he made it perfectly clear at the beginning of the offseason that everybody was available for trade. That's your biggest competition. Because there are not a ton of teams that can just absorb Russell Westbrook's contract. Okay, and again, I would have to sit here and play around with the numbers to see exactly, you know, what Miami would have to do, how this whole thing would fit. With Houston, it's simple, right? You could exchange Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook. Now, Oklahoma City, you'd have to get a whole lot more in return. But if the Thunder want draft picks, Daryl Morey would give up everything to not only get rid of the contract of Chris Paul, but to acquire Russell Westbrook and team him up with James Harden. That's the team the Heat need to really be careful with.
Yeah, Houston's not going to just sit pat. I think they're going to try to, you know, be aggressive and go after him. It's if OKC, you know, OKC and Houston already, you know, have a James Harden. I mean, they worked that deal out. So they have a relationship there, you know, working deals out.
Well, Russell Westbrook, we've seen him play his last game with the Thunder. I'm convinced of that.
There's no way you can go back to that now, right?
No, I don't see Houston landing Westbrook. I really don't. I mean,
what about
again,
Detroit?
Why would Detroit want to, though?
Reggie Jackson, Langston Galloway, Tony Snell. a 2020 unprotected, a swap in 2021.
Where are you pulling this out of?
I'm just finding things and reading things, Jordan. 2022 unprotected.
Why would you do that? Why would the Thunder do that?
They're getting three picks. Unprotected.
Yeah, give me the years. Give me the years of the draft.
So they'd get a 2020 unprotected first-round pick.
Okay.
A swap in 2021 and a 2022 unprotected.
Yeah, so the reason why you throw in the swaps, obviously, you cannot trade draft picks in back-to-back years. It's a stupid rule in the CBA with the NBA. So you'd swap. You're going to get the better of the two picks.
OKC would be towards the bottom. So, of course, if you're Detroit, you're going to use the swap.
You know, and looking at the haul that they got for Paul George, I mean, that was a huge, I mean, that was the biggest haul of draft picks in NBA history, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I believe it was four first-round picks. What you get out of this, the Clippers' first-round picks in 2022, 2024, and 2026, two first-round selections from Miami in 2021 and 2023. So I guess if you were to go that route with Detroit, I mean, you're looking at two to three picks every season until 2026. That's not a bad haul. You got to make sure you do something with the assets, and I believe that Sam Presti would do that. That wouldn't make any sense from a Detroit standpoint, really. I don't understand. I can see Miami pulling a move. I can see Houston pulling a move. Detroit, you're going to trade future assets. Russell Westbrook's not going to take you to the top of the Eastern Conference by himself. I don't know. Maybe you pair him with Blake Griffin. How does that work? I don't. To me, it makes most sense for Miami to get this deal done.
And if you're Miami, give up those rookies and picks and make it work.
Yeah, I think you do, and this is the reason why I say you do that. We know that Miami,
those kind of talent like Russell Westbrook, they just don't come around, and you have an opportunity to go out and get it.
Well, they don't, but you're also bringing him into a market where you know free agents will go to play. People want to play in Miami.
You want to play in Miami. You want to live in Miami.
It's the same concept as L.A.
Of course.
Right? I mean, the Clippers can give up a huge haul to bring in Paul George because you are going to attract free agents to play with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. You live in L.A. It's the same concept in Miami.
Look at Jimmy Butler. I mean, he went to Miami by himself. He wanted to play in Miami.
I think it gets done. I think Russell Westbrook plays for the Miami Heat. Out of time on this edition of the show. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We're out.